we plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this woman, not traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
So I come from a couple generations of preachers. My grandfather was a Southern Baptist minister. My dad was a pastor in the evangelical non-denominational church. And some of you might not know, but my degree is actually from a seminary. So I have a PhD in clinical psychology, a master's in psychology, and a master's in theology. And given where I came from and the kind of context that I grew up in, pursuing advanced study of theology was actually sort of an act of rebellion more than an act of towing the family line. Many women in the community that I grew up in were not necessarily heavily encouraged to pursue higher education. So for a while, I contemplated taking my interests in spirituality and human well-being to the next level and actually pursuing ordination through the Presbyterian Church. I thought about that pretty heavily for a couple of years. And during that time, I was on a preaching team at the church that we were part of in Fresno. We obviously don't talk a lot about religion on the podcast, and it's not something that I probably neatly fit in any boxes anymore. It's something that's important to me, but the way that I think about and practice faith, spirituality has changed significantly over the years. But when I was on this preaching team, a couple of years, I think in a row, I was tasked with preaching on the third Sunday of Advent. And the third Sunday of Advent, for those of you who don't practice Advent or know what Advent is basically like counting down the Sundays before Christmas. So there's sometimes an Advent wreath where you light one of the candles in the wreath each Sunday before Christmas. You light four, and then when you get to Christmas Eve, you light this big candle in the middle. So each of the candles has a meaning, depending on your tradition. But the third Sunday in Advent is often called Mary's Sunday. And so it's the Sunday when people reflect on the role of Mary in the Christmas story, the Christmas narrative. It's also the Sunday which is ascribed the attribute of joy. So there's a lot of focus on the experience of joy that Mary felt in, you know, giving birth to Jesus. The first of these Advent Sundays that I was tasked with preaching was a couple of days after the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. And it was one of the worst acts of violence, the worst mass shootings that the U.S. had seen. 20 children were killed, ages 6 and 7. And I think six adults were also killed. So here I am, and I'm trying to talk to a community of people about joy and motherhood, when there are all of these families that have just suffered the traumatic loss of their children, kids who had been murdered. And I really struggled to try to reconcile these two parts of life, right? The joy and the bliss that we experience loving and caring for others with the brutal reality of violence and illness and terror that lives in our world. This experience really became kind of a reorganizing experience for me when I think about Christmas. I feel very resistant to the bright, shiny narratives that we tell ourselves about what it means to be in joy. I want to be able to always hold joy and suffering, joy and pain in tension together. Because I feel like true joy has to be with the full acknowledgement of loss and pain. The way that I ended up talking about this on that Sunday was largely inspired by a Michelangelo sculpture, the Pietà, which is this sculpture of Mary, who in the sculpture has a very young, youthful, sort of vibrant face. But across her lap and in her arms is the body of her dead son, the adult Jesus, who'd been crucified. And I really began to think about what it means to bring a child into the world who you know is going to die. And I realize this is not like a super happy Christmas thought, but it's the reality of life for us as mortal beings. The things that we love will pass away, like the things that matter to us. So if we are going to be real in joy, it has to be with the full insight, the full knowledge that at any moment loss is possible. And the extent to which we as entrepreneurs, as founders, can hold both joy and loss, the more we're insulated against coming undone when things go wrong. Whether that's things go wrong on the small scale, we have a low income quarter, or it's things go wrong on the big scale, we lose someone that we love or our business fails. If I'd known that the whole sermon I'd prepared about joy and motherhood would need to be redone to accommodate for 20 dead kids, I'm really not sure I would have signed up to preach then or ever. But I have to be honest, that experience, that time of trying to really wrestle on a personal level with those disparate realities, and it really made me sort of fall in love with Christmas in a different way. I think the thing that did it for me was this connection to Mary and this realization that maybe she didn't know it at the time, but that she was giving birth to a child that was going to die. And she was, of course, somewhat of a child herself, a very young woman, not the kind of person who is going to be in the running to be part of a story that eventually changed the world. And again, regardless of what your particular religious convictions are, let's just treat it like a story, if nothing else. And it's this story of this young woman who has this miraculous pregnancy. She's not supposed to be pregnant. She gets pregnant. She goes on this long journey. She gives birth far away from home with no family, with no help, with no support. And then goes on to raise this child who is so very different than her, but then eventually begins to change the world. And then, of course, is killed. So the story in itself is one of tremendous complexity. There's a lot of darkness in it, and that's not including the whole piece about genocide and the killing of young children. And I'm talking to you about this today because I feel a little bit fatigued of the Christmas hype and the kind of holiday pressure to host and produce and give gifts and make everything all packaged and beautiful, because so few of our lives are like that. It feels like we're all in a pageant some holiday seasons. We're all sort of dressed up and shiny, but it's not that real. On a cynical level, we can reduce the whole holiday season to giving rich people more things and feeding fat people more sugar. I mean, it's just this like overindulgence that feels a little bit delusional. I know it sounds like I'm a hater, and honestly, I'm not. I think I just am at a point in my life where I'm exhausted, except for the things that are meaningful. I have all kinds of energy for things that are meaningful. So I want to help for myself and maybe for us as a community kind of regain some sense of meaning to this season of holiday merrymaking. This is our second winter in Minnesota, and right now we're right around the winter solstice. It is the darkest time of the year. We wake up in darkness, and the kids come home from school in darkness. We spend most of our lives, it seems like, in darkness. And that's on a day when the sun comes out. So we've had a couple of days recently that have just been kind of dark all day. Lots of snow. It's very quiet and dark and a little bit contemplative. I remember being at church when I was a kid, and especially Christmas Eve, there was a time at the end of the Christmas Eve service when all of the lights would be out, but there would be one light, one candle rather, lit at the front of the church. And people would sing Silent Night and pass the light of the candle. So you would see this wave of light begin to overtake what had previously been this very dark room. And that is one of the things that I most love and appreciate about some of my childhood experiences being in church, but also this season is right now in Minnesota, it's so very dark. And we live by this lake, a really large lake that's completely iced over now. And every once in a while, there'll be some brave person out in the middle of the lake ice fishing, and we'll see like a light, a flashlight or a lantern or something, and it will light up this whole lake because there's no other lights. There's so much dark. So this sense of having all of these places in life where you're watching light show up in dark places has become a really central and important theme of the holiday for me. But I think it's most meaningful when you hold both intention. The light is so striking because of the darkness around it. And if we put on our kind of happy, happy, joy, joy blinders and all we see are flashing lights, then we really miss the significance of how tremendous light is, which is why I think we need to make our Christmas experiences a little bit grittier, a little bit more honest, a little bit more in tension with the suffering and loss that many of us experience in the reality of our lives. My friend Liz, who's a native Minnesotan and one of my closest friends here in Minneapolis, taught me about the Danish practice of hygge, H-Y-G-G-E. And it's the season of coziness that we practice in the winter, where it's like blankets and slippers and books by the fire and tea and hot toddies. Things are warm and cozy inside to combat the coldness and darkness and slightly less than hospitable conditions outside. And it's a seasonal lesson in how to comfort yourself, how to bring light and coziness into a season of the year that's dark and cold and not very comfortable. And honestly, I think there's some really good lessons for entrepreneurs in this particular discipline of figuring out how to find your own glimpses of light and find your own capacity to comfort yourself when things feel dark and insurmountable. So perhaps that's enough gritty Christmas reflection for now. But I want you to know, all of you who are listening, that I am grateful for you and that I'm committed to doing what I can to help support you in your own search for meaning and your own sense of health and well-being. So for those of you who have had a hard year, for those of you who are having a hard holiday season, those of you who are in a period of grief or a period of loneliness or a time of anxiety or fear, my longing for you is that you find some glimpses of light, of hope, of peace, of joy, and of love during this holiday season. And maybe the harder you work to find it, the more satisfying it will be. Happy holidays.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.